Welcome to Illinois Family Spotlight, a conversation about issues of the day from a biblical perspective, as well as highlights from interviews, conferences, and events. Here's Monty Larrick.
Thanks for making Illinois Family Spotlight part of your day. Dr. Scott Lively is an activist, attorney, and you run a ministry, Dr. Lively. What is that?
Well, Scott Lively Ministries, I've been for many years sort of a missionary to the global pro-family movement, and I do consulting and assist with pro-family projects in various places around the world.
And your website?
ScottLively.net.
All right. You are the author of Redeeming the Rainbow, A Christian Response to the Gay Agenda. It's been out a while, but
yes. It
doesn't seem like a majority of Christians are responding to the gay agenda. We've accepted the status quo on gay marriage, for example, and when politicians seem to be accepting of the gay agenda to some degree, we accept it. What's your response? What's the danger of that?
Well, that's the problem with conservatism is conservatives conserve, right? They try to preserve the status quo, whatever that is, and resist the agenda of the left. That's a recipe for failure because politicians, by definition, are compromisers. If the compromise is between the status quo and what the left wants, then they're going to make, even if it's a small step, they're going to make a step to the left. And so what I advise Christians to do and conservatives to do is always when the left comes forward with an initiative to push back with a counter-initiative that takes the ball in the other direction so that the status quo, or so that the compromise position for the politicians is to keep the status quo, and there's a chance you could actually move the ball to the right instead of to the left.
What would be a good example of how to do that?
Illinois has a law. They're attempting to change parental rights laws to require parents to affirm transgender insanity under threat of child abuse accusations. I'd say what you need is pushing for a policy that affirms traditional parental rights beyond what exists in the law right now. And therefore, by doing that, you set up a real fight in which if the politicians are afraid to go against the left, right, they'll keep the status quo. That's the compromise when our side pushes back to move the ball in the other direction. Otherwise, it always moves left. It's a constant reality that we face with conservatism. It always loses over time.
Public schools, as you know, we all know, there's a lot of indoctrination going on.
Nonstop.
So what's your message to Christian parents who still haven't made that decision to pull their kids out of government schools?
Well, I know I have a kind of a harsh response to that. If you are intentionally keeping your kids in public schools, you know the children are being indoctrinated in secular humanist presuppositions in every field. If you know that that's true and you're sending your children there anyway, I can't believe that God is happy with you in letting that be. You have choices. You have choices. No matter how difficult your circumstances are, you could make it work if you wanted to protect your children from what's happening in the public schools. And I'm not talking just about the extreme stuff, the LGBT indoctrination and the, you know, the DEI and all of these radical leftists. I'm talking about just the basics, the evolutionary premise of all of the subjects in the public school, the level of social interaction between the children, where almost all of the children are up to their eyeballs in every kind of perverted material that's on the internet. Right? We have a duty to our children to protect them from those things. If we intentionally put them into a place where they're being, with their minds, their innocent little minds, are being changed to go against God, that's on you, parent.
Do you see any scenario where we could actually rescue the government school system?
Oh, not in the current arrangement, no. Maybe during the Reagan Revolution, there might have been a chance to do something like that, but under the current, and maybe if Trump is reelected and there is a massive social wave of change, it's possible that could take place. But those things, that's going to be a while before that happens, even under the best case scenario. For little children, a month is like a year. You need to save them now. Don't hope that something's going to change in the future.
It seems as though that the homosexual influencers are infiltrating conservatism.
Oh, yeah.
Give me an idea of how that's happening and what we have to do to push back.
Conservatives basically walk three steps behind the progressives. And we resist the change, and then once the change has been established, then we surrender to it, and we draw a new line in the sand, right? That's how conservatives operate. We started out in the 1950s trying to defend the sanctity of marriage. We lost that. Then we fought against pornography. We lost that. Then we tried to stop the introduction of no-fault divorce. We lost that. Then we drew a new line on abortion. We lost that. We drew a new line on sex education or condom education for teenagers. And then we drew a new line and a new line and a new line. Now our heels are at the shoreline. The waves are lapping on our heels. There's really no place left to go. We've lost on everything except transgenderism, and we're very close on that too. So conservatism doesn't work. You have to have a vision for the future in which you have a plan with agenda items on how you're going to achieve that plan for a world that actually operates according to biblical values.
There seems to be some pushback on the trans movement, even among some liberals.
But it's resistance. All it is resistance. Resistance doesn't do anything except slow the process. Look, a team that only plays defense can never win a game. At the best, you could get a tie, maybe, or you can delay, but you almost always are going to lose the game unless you have an offense. What's the offense for conservatives? And don't tell me stopping them from doing this. No, that's not offense. That's defense. What's your offense, Christian conservatives? What's your offense?
Yeah. As you know, a lot of pastors are reluctant to address issues like abortion and the gay agenda, the transgender agenda. They steer clear of that. They just want to preach the gospel. What's your message to those pastors?
Well, look, any pastor who is not preparing his congregation to deal with the real-world threats outside the walls of the church is not a good shepherd, no matter how nice he is to the people inside the walls, right? They're only doing half their job if they're not dealing with the things that happen in the real world that their congregation has to face every day.
Well, what do you say to pastors who they want to get the ball rolling on these issues? They just don't know how to get started. They're afraid of a big split in the church, and there's a lot of people who are sitting in those pews who aren't Christian, and they won't be hearing the gospel.
Follow the leading of the Holy Spirit. That's what I've always done. Be willing to do what the Lord prompts you to do when he prompts you to do it. Just come to him saying, here I am, send me. And then when he says go, you go. You don't have to invent something new. There are opportunities for advancing the biblical worldview all around us all the time in evangelism, in discipleship, in community service of various kinds, where you can take the truth of the scripture into the public square in a positive way. And then when you encounter the resistance against you, you press on through it with faith and courage.
This is Illinois Family Spotlight. We'll take a time out and continue our conversation with Dr. Scott Lively right after this.
With a woman to look at culture from a Christian worldview, I'm John Stone Street with The Point. In a new book called The Big Fail, What the Pandemic Revealed About Who America Protects and Who It Leaves Behind, reporter Joe Nocera painted a less than flattering picture of the way that many American industries, from banking to healthcare, handled the COVID-19 pandemic. Particularly troubling is the account of for-profit hospitals. For example, the Wall Street Journal reported that hospitals in wealthy neighborhoods in L.A. routinely refused to accept transfer patients from overrun community hospitals, not because they didn't have the beds, but in order to save money. According to the head of a community hospital in L.A. Southside, her hospital treated more COVID patients than wealthier hospitals four times their size. Edmund Burke famously wrote, "It's ordained in the eternal constitution of things that men of intemperate minds cannot be free." For a market economy to remain free, businesses have to operate with moral clarity. People can't be sacrificed for profit. And what's true for individuals is just as true for industries. We cannot serve both God and money. For the Colson Center, I'm John Stone Street.
Thanks for joining Illinois Family Spotlight. Monty Lyric here, along with Dr. Scott Lively. your ministry.
Yes, Scott Lively Ministries, scottlively.net.
Dr. Lively, you're saying that conservatives need to go on offense and change strategies to win. Easier said than done. How do we go about doing that?
What strategies do we need to take to win?
Well, we need to have a vision. To win, we have to have a vision. Where there is no vision, the people perish, right? And what I mean is you get a picture in your mind of what society looks like if you could have your way as a Christian. What would society actually look like? The nuts and bolts of it, right? Not some fantasy image from the movies, but how would it work? If you stood in the middle of the town square and looked around, what would you see that's different than it's here now? If you looked at how the families are interacting, what would be different, right? You get that picture in your mind, and then you ask the question, how can we get from here to there? And ask the Lord, Lord, how can we get from here to there? And he will help you set the steps to accomplish that. That's different than playing defense and simply trying to stop the left, who does have a vision. They have a picture of what they want the world to look like, and we're just in the way. And all we do as conservatives is just get in their way without having a vision of our own that actually competes with them.
Well, is part of winning getting political?
Well, this politics is just simply the process of making decisions that groups of people have to live with. That's all it is. I mean, you have politics in your family, you have politics in your church, that's all it is. Now, we talk about candidate politics or issue politics in the public square. That's just the on a big scale of the things that we deal with all the time. What are we going to do? That's what politics is asking. What are we going to do about this or that or the other thing? And then everybody chimes in with their opinion. And then the people who really want to accomplish something, they get together and they make a plan for actually achieving what they want to do. That's what we need to adopt. I saw a term someone adopted today, right-wing progressives, right? Right-wing progressives, that's what we need to be, right-wing progressives. In other words, we need to think of ourselves as people who progress toward a goal, but that goal is a vision of our own that's completely different from the vision that our opponents are pushing for, and in many ways, the opposite of what they're pushing for. Not always. Sometimes components of what they want to do actually aren't so bad, but we want to do them in a godly way that's going to produce health and goodness for our society, and that's going to look family-friendly, and that's going to honor the God who created us, and where relationships are wholesome and natural and not degrading. And those are the kinds of components of the vision that I have for the future. But if all of us thought that way, we think in terms of what do we want the world to be like, and how can we get there using the talents and resources that are at our disposal.
But does winning on, let's say, the life issue and the homosexual agenda, et cetera, mean that you have to compromise? Let's say you say, I can support a candidate who accepts rape and incest provisions, or I can accept a candidate who will appoint homosexuals to high-level positions in his cabinet.
I run for governor twice in Massachusetts. I know candidate politics, and I spent many years with the Oregon Citizens Alliance doing ballot measure campaigns, so I know issue politics too. Politics is the realm of compromise. You can't exist in politics without compromising. You draw the line on the things you won't compromise on, and then you compromise on the things that are less important to you in order to achieve something. You can't do politics without compromise of some kind, but you make it clear to those you are speaking with about public policy that this is a hard and fast rule for me, right? I'm not going to budge on this, but let's talk about this other thing. If you stand with me on this vote, I'll stand with you on that vote, because that's not something I have a hard line on. That's how politics is supposed to work, and that's how it does work. And it can't be any way else, because you're talking about setting policy for huge numbers of people, you know, hundreds of different interest groups with divergent interests. So there has to be some kind of compromise someplace. But we don't want moral compromise on the most essential things. We're never going to give up the babies. We're never going to accept the killing of unborn babies as something being a good public policy. We're never going to accept having our children transformed through this transgender indoctrination. We're not going to accept those things. But if you want to talk about budgets for street repairs or this or that or the other thing, you know, hey, we got some flexibility there.
What's next on the homosexual trans agenda? It seems like they've got everything they want.
No, it's far from over.
Yeah. What's next?
Transgenderism is the is a stepping stone to transhumanism. The generation of children now being indoctrinated in transgender ideology, even if they themselves are not transitioning, they're being very strategically broken free from the idea that they're created in the image of God as male and female. They're being taught that they can be anything that their feelings dictate that they can be, and the technology is emerging to allow them to do that. This generation of young people, when they're fully indoctrinated, will be the first generation of guinea pigs in what is going to be cyborg organisms, really. They're talking about transhumanism is about robotics, genetics, and artificial intelligence being used to augment humanity, to create a new species of human beings. It's very, very dangerous. They speak openly about it. This isn't some conspiracy theory. They're giving speeches about this and explaining it in detail. And it's the most dangerous thing we face in the human race is transhumanism.
And they'll sell it as we can make a better world.
Right. And they don't care what we think. You know, those of us with gray hair and all, they don't care what we think at all. They've focused on the kids. They're training the kids to see themselves as malleable. They're preparing them in order to be ready to have robotic implants put into their brain or attach their arm, to have chips put in their brain for telepathy or whatever, all kinds of possibilities coming up. It'll be the end of Homo sapien. It'll be the beginning of some new category of human being. This is their philosophy that they are espousing right now. This is what they are predicting. Noah Yuval Harari and his ilk, they're completely open about this. And our job right now is to rescue these children from this dangerous ideology by linking them back to the created order, the natural world. Get the kids out of the artificial world, bring them back into the natural world, plug them into the reality of the trees and the plants and the rivers and the streams and the clouds, right? Get them away from the internet, at least part of their lives, and get them in a place where they can interact with God in his creation. And that's the best thing that any of us can do to prevent losing an entire generation of children into the world of machines. So that's what's coming.
Terrifying. Do we need federal legislation that would prevent multi-partner marriages? I think it's coming.
Well, I think it's de facto here. I mean, there is no restriction on people living together. Right? I mean, if you want to declare yourself in a polyamorous relationship, you can do it right now. There's no law to stop you. You just don't get a marriage license for it. And then, frankly, under the logic of Obergefell, there's no reason why they couldn't add multiple partners in a quote-unquote marriage. Marriage means nothing since Obergefell. It has no meaning at all. Real marriage was established by God as an institution between one man and one woman for the bearing and raising of children to replace them in the next generation. It's a holy institution that is religious in nature and spiritual in nature. What we have now is nothing like that at all. It's merely a social contract that's invented and given a constitutional authority that the founders never would have granted.
What happens to America? What happens to Christians if a Democrat is elected president in November?
Well, you know, this is probably the most important election that we have in our lives. I believe we lost the Republic in 2020. I think there's still a chance to claw it back, a small chance. I think if Trump gets elected, I think that there's a chance to fix things. But I don't know that they're going to allow that to happen. I mean, I believe the entire plandemic, the plandemic itself was designed in order to justify the change of election laws, in order for them to create enormous mail-in ballot reservoirs that they could then cheat with. I believe Trump absolutely won the 2020 election. They stole it from him, and that they will do anything in their power to prevent him from getting back in. These people are insane. They have absolutely no moral restraint whatsoever. They do whatever they can get away with that the population will let them get away with. And if we actually end up having an election with Donald Trump being elected, it will be one of the greatest miracles in the history of the world. Because it'll mean that those people who will do anything to stop him were not able to do it. And that probably can only take place with the hand of God.
In Illinois, looks like they could pass assisted suicide law. Obviously, it's dangerous.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts about that? How do we push back? Because the language they use, death with dignity. It's a caring way to care for those who are dying.
I don't think it's good public policy. I think the way that you respond to it is you point out the places where it exists, it's used to get rid of unwanted people. It's really the death with dignity argument is it's a euphemism. It's a distraction. What they're really doing with a assisted suicide law is preparing for the elimination of the useless eaters. It's a eugenics policy. And when you see the places where they put the laws in, Canada, for example, was encouraging people to go to the assisted suicide centers just because they were homeless. You know, this is your solution, is kill yourself. That's their real mentality. It's not about death with dignity. I have sympathy for people who have like extremely painful diseases that on and on and on, and there's a certain sort of sympathy for a person who wants to end their life and avoid that, right? I have some sympathy for that. But that's not what this is about. A death with dignity, so-called death with dignity law, is really a eugenics policy for culling the useless eaters from society. That's why it's dangerous.
Dr. Scott Lively, thank you so much. Once again, how do folks connect with you and your ministry?
Yeah, you can reach me at scottlively.net. You can I have an email there, and scottlively.store if you want to get any of my books. God bless you.
All right. Thank you, Dr. Scott Lively. Thank you, folks, for tuning in. Please support the work of the Illinois Family Institute. Do look at our website for some challenging stories Dr. Lively has written for IFI. Also, go to our events page to see what's coming up. So tell your family and friends about Illinois Family Spotlight. Until next time, stay healthy, stay active, and God bless.
For more information about Illinois Family Spotlight, visit ifiaction.org. And to email questions and comments, do so at feedback@ifiaction.org.